what, that they're coming from my body or something else. And if you have someone else sitting in a room and you poke them in the arm, and that's all I can see is this person's arm getting poked across the room. I know that it's that person's arm getting poked. But now if you anesthetize my arm, now I have no sensory feedback coming from my arm. And I'm watching this other person getting their arm poked. I start to feel like I'm getting poked in my anesthetized arm.
Wow. I am Boutros Ghali. Put down your gun and listen to...
Are You Aware? Music that has something to say on CITR 101.9 Vancouver.
It happened at the same time. It happened. listening to Are You Aware? Music that has something to say on CITR 101.9 in Vancouver. Welcome to another installment, an hour and a half of socially positive and social justice music to inspire you guys out there to be involved in positive change. I am so excited today. I am just bursting. If you were listening 2 weeks ago, I gave you guys a little bit of an announcement, and tonight it's actually happening. We have Murray Lightburn from the Deers calling in about half an hour to talk to me about the Deers' 20-year history, their new album. It's a live album called Live at Pesquero, and all other fun things that I've got in store for him. I am so excited to have this man on air with me today, because he is part of a band that has been such a great staple in Canadian indie music over the last 20 years. And we just heard one of their songs from their most recent studio album, Degeneration Street, one of my favorites, Omega Dog, which is just an epic song of fabulousness, and I love it. His voice is just amazing. It's so emotionally magical. I just can't even put it into words. What a fantastic singer and songwriter and multi-instrumentalist as well. So we're really lucky to have him on the show here today at around 6:30. So keep listening in to find out all the intricacies of the Deers. He also has his Are You Aware mixtape, which I'm very excited to play for you guys while he's chatting to us as well. So it's a whole swack load of stuff we are going to cover when we're talking to Murray Lightburn in about 25 minutes. And might I say, the man has got very good taste in music. His Are You Aware mixtape is mighty fine, if I do say so myself. Moving right along, because I want to get a couple of songs in before Murray comes on air. And I have to remind you, listeners, next week is a very important time for CITR. It is our fun drive week. This is the one and time in the year when we ask our listeners to support us. We are a non-profit radio station that really relies on our listeners' support, and we do hope that you will be able to support us next year. We're trying to raise $33,000. We have this old-looking board that, you know what, it's had its best days behind it, I'd say. I'm just looking at it now, looking at it going, wow, I think it was it's got some pretty sweet 80s sort of insignia on it, and I think we need to update it because we want to make sure that you are receiving the best sound possible. So I'll be talking about Fun Drive throughout the show to remind you guys to listen in. I know that usually Are You Aware is every 2 weeks, but we're actually swapping next week with Peanut Butter and Jam. So I'll be back on the airwaves from 6 to 7:30 next week to encourage you guys to give, and please give during the Are You Aware show, because we're going to try and raise a lot of money for Are You Aware, for CITR, so we can keep going strong for another 75 years. And I'll have a bunch of CDs to give away for people that call up and donate during my show next week. But let's keep the music going while we're talking about, you know, your listeners out there wanting to hear this wonderful independent music that we have here on CITR. The next song I've got for you is a person that really doesn't need much introduction. He's got a new album out. It's called Blunderbuss, and it's his first actual debut album. I'm talking about Jack White. He's a multi-instrumentalist. Everyone knows him from the White Stripes, but unfortunately they split in February 2011. He, like I said, he released his debut solo album last year in April, and it was through his own record label called Third Man Records. And this is a fun fact that I did not know. Jack White's actually Polish, Scottish, and Canadian descent, so you guys can claim him as part of your own as well. And he was the youngest of 10 children. He started playing an instrument, a drum, at age 6. So not only is he a wicked guitarist, but he's also a very accomplished drummer as well. He's playing Sasquatch Music Festival in May as well, which is down at the Gorge in Washington. And if you haven't been down there, check it out, because Sasquatch is truly an amazing festival. He's actually put his name to a pretty cool thing that's going on with Greenpeace right now. Greenpeace has joined forces with a bunch of celebrities who are asking for global sanctuary in the Arctic. They've joined forces with these celebrities to highlight the demand that oil drilling and unsustainable fishing are having on banned on the banned in Arctic waters. And these fishing stuff is actually banned. It was launched in June 2012, and Greenpeace is trying to get 1 million people to add their names to the Arctic Scroll. Once they do, they're going to go to an expedition in the North Pole and plant it on the seabed 4 kilometers beneath the ice. And this spot will actually be marked by a flag for the future designed by the youth of the world, which is pretty cool. So you can add your name to it. Just go to savethearctic.org and you know, be involved with what Jack White thinks is really important, which is saving the Arctic. And you know what? I here at Are You Aware think that that's pretty damn important as well. So the next song we're going to hear is Love Interruption from Blunderbuss, which is Jack White's new album. You're on CITR 101.9 in Vancouver.
Inside me and twist it all around. I want love to grab my fingers gently, slam them in a doorway, put my face into the ground. I want love to murder my own mother and take her off to somewhere like hell or up above. And I want love to change my friends to enemies, change my friends to enemies, show me how it's all my fault. I won't let love disrupt, corrupt, or interrupt me. I won't let love disrupt, corrupt, or interrupt me. Yeah, I won't let love disrupt, corrupt, or interrupt me anymore. I want love to walk right up and bite me, grab a hold of me and fight me, leave me dying on the ground. And I want love to spit my mouth wide open and cover up my ears and never let me hear a sound. I want love to forget that you offended me, or how you had defended me when everybody told me down. Yeah, I want love to change my friends to enemies, change my friends to enemies, show me how it's all my fault. Yeah, I won't let love disrupt, corrupt, or interrupt me. I won't let love disrupt, corrupt, or interrupt me.
You can have it if you don't mind, somewhere on the other stay with me. You confuse me with your riddles and your sudden generosity. Call me in the afternoon, even by one, by one. Call me in the afternoon, even by one, by one.
Take one if you need it, but you really shouldn't get this before. another shot by and wipe your dirty hands on me. Swallow till you go blind and find a little company. Call me in the afternoon, even by one, by one. Call me in the afternoon, even by one, by one. Take one if you need it, but you really shouldn't be out there.
Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts in the West End at
Australian Boot Company, Banyan Books and Sound, Baru Latino Restaurante, The Bike Kitchen, Cove, Dentry's Pub, Displaced Hatchery, Limelight, The Eatery, Fresh is Best Salsa, Gargoyles, Prussian Music, Rufus's Guitar Shop, and the UBC Bookstore.
It pays to be a friend of CITR. To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus or online at citr.ca.
Thank you.
listening to Are You Aware? Music that has something to say on CITR 101.9 in Vancouver. And we heard another Canadian legend, Elliot Brood, with their song Miss You Now from their album Mountain Meadows. In the middle there, we had Half Moon Run with their new album, Dark Eyes, Call Me in the Afternoon. That's a new band that's come out that Mumford & Sons are actually raving about, and they're touring with them in a couple of weeks. But without further ado, I'm very excited to have on air Murray Lightburn from the Wall of Brilliant Sound that is The Deers, Canada's own, that takes you on a journey through their rich and epic soundscape of pure emotion. The Deers' powerful live shows have been described as the sonic equivalent of seeing the face of God. And tonight, Murray's laughing at this. I love it. It's true. I sourced it a few times. And then we're going to be talking about the recent album release that captures three nights of Face of God performances at a Mexican club back in 2010, along with his Are You Aware mixtape and much more. Murray, thanks so much for talking with us today.
Wow, thanks for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Did you like your intro?
It was like stand-up comedy, actually.
I'll take that as a compliment. Because,
I mean, really, like, I think, you know, the sonic equivalent of the face of God, it was quite a while ago. I don't know if people, we still strive for that when we get on stage, but, you know, it's funny because I was just saying to Natalia this evening as I was, you know, scrolling through the news and reading, I guess, the 21st century equivalent of the evening paper, which is basically just scrolling through the internet news. And I was reading a film review, and I think that, like, we need a break from criticism, like professional criticism. I think we need a break, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I think people...
Just a break from, like, no more movie reviews, no more record reviews, no more this review, that review, restaurant reviews. Just let people live, discover things, and make their own assessment of said thing. You know what I mean? Like...
Absolutely. I think...
I'm exhausted.
Oh, no. We've only started the conversation. I honestly think people are, you know, people that probably aren't as creative as others would like to criticize because it makes them feel better. I think that a discussion is always great, but I also think, like you say, you need to make your own opinion, and music and art is such a subjective medium. It's you draw on your own personal experiences and emotions associated with it. And a song that you listen to and I listen to, we're going to have two different reactions to it.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of it, there's so many variables involved because everybody has a different personal experience. And so when they listen to a record or they watch a film or they read a book, you know, or they go to even a restaurant, you know, like something in it will speak to them. And some people will never experience that because they got tripped up by reading, you know,
TripAdvisor.
You know, someone else's experience was terrible, so nobody else should bother with this, you know, which is just kind of like, isn't that a little extreme, you know? So I guess it's just kind of, I didn't mean to go there. I was just, this is just a typical evening in the Lightburn Yanchak household.
Oh, well, I like, you know, you can diverge any way you want. I love it. So I guess you don't read your reviews then?
I really try hard not to. Like, I really, you know, it's funny that sometimes, like, you'll get emails from, you know, whatever, your publicist or whatever. It's like, oh, check this out, a cool picture, and, you know, the great review and all that stuff. And then that kind of opens the door. So it's like, okay, here's some nice reviews, and then here's some, you know, crappy reviews. And, they never show you the crappy reviews. They just kind of show you the good reviews, which, you know, kind of opens this door. You, like, you wouldn't even be thinking about checking out the reviews. And so when they send you these reviews and newspaper clippings and whatever, scanned, you know, whatever, in a magazine, it opens this door. It's like, oh, I wonder what other people are saying. You kind of get greedy, which is a terrible, terrible thing, incredibly vain and lame. And so you wind up, like, and also just with the internet and, like, you know, between, like, the Deers, I'm not personally on Facebook, but the Deers are on Facebook and, you know, on Twitter and all that crap. And so it's absolutely unavoidable. Like, you get up in the morning and you know, you're going to get either a text or an email or an alert or something, you know. You'd have to be completely cut off from, you know, all of those sources, which is kind of pretty predominant in all of our lives nowadays. You'd have to be completely cut off to not know what people are saying about your work. And that kind of sucks, because I remember when we started, like, 10 years ago, you still had to go and physically pick up a newspaper. You'd have to find a newspaper to read your review, you know.
And do you feel that that's a little bit more organic then?
Well, it kind of makes me think of, you know, pick up the morning papers. What are the trades saying about our picture? You know what I mean? It's kind of like,
your stocks are up.
Long for that kind of way of, you know, you have to really seek it out and really, you know, but now it's like you don't have to seek it out. It's like, you know, I remember the first time Gang of Losers was, the first time one of our records was leaked was Gang of Losers. And it was leaked like 3 months before the release. And I kind of didn't know how to feel, but I just remember getting like 4 or 5 emails the day it leaked. Like, your album's leaked. Your album's leaked. Your album's leaked. It's like, I didn't even get out of bed that morning yet. And yet, like, I'm getting this news about my, you know, my work, you
Absolutely.
Know? And it was it's just kind of, that's the age we live in now. It's just, you can't escape yourself.
Well, it's, and it's everywhere, right? Like you say, it's Twitter, Facebook. I have Facebook and Twitter for Are You Aware? And I'm terrible with Twitter. I'm absolutely terrible with it because I forget about it. I'm like, oh yeah, I should write that thing in there. But
yeah, we are pretty terrible as well with, like, the upkeep of all this crap, you know. And it's just exhausting, you know, like, I mean, and it's just opening the door for bands who, you know, really want, you know, I read another, I'm going to digress again.
This is awesome. Don't worry.
But I heard today on the radio, I was listening to the CBC. I was going to pick up my daughter from school. And, you know, I listened to, CBC every day almost. And, they were talking about somebody where it was coming out that Billboard was coming up with a new way of determining their charts.
Oh, gosh.
That involved, like, YouTube plays.
Oh, no.
And so, like, potentially, you know, things like the Harlem Shake could potentially be the number one thing in America. Which is absolutely, like, it's not even the decline of our civilization. It's just, it's the end of our civilization.
That's it. We may as well all just go and live in on a tropical island and be done with it.
It's kind of hilarious to think that now, okay, so never mind, you know, all the younger, hipper bands that are coming out is my potential, you know, competition. Now I have to compete with a meme. Is that what it's called? A meme? Is that, what is it? What do you call the Harlem Shake? What is that known in the?
Oh, I have no idea.
In the cloud, what do they call it? The interweb. What are the kids calling it?
The World Wide Web. The cyber channel.
Anyway, to think that is my competition going forward, like Harlem Shake, whatever the hell that is, like some kind of, you know, internet fad thing. It's kind of, you know, I guess it's not much different from like Max Headroom being like a rock star in the 80s. You know what I mean? Like, you know,
that's a bold statement.
Well, where is Max Headroom now?
Oh, I'm sure he's
like somewhere in a pile of fucking Commodore 64s in a
he's probably serving Big Macs down the road.
Some scuzzy terminals.
On that point, have you ever watched Flight of the Navigator, that movie from the 80s?
Flight of the Navigator. I've heard of it. I don't know if I've ever seen it.
Oh,
though.
It's just a random thing. It's a children's movie. It was big in the 80s. I watched it with my boyfriend the other day. We looked up the child star that was involved, and he's living in Salt Spring. Selling
where?
In Salt Spring Islands in BC, selling shoes,
really?
Sports shoes. So there you go. One-hit wonders don't go very far. But to your point about charts, I mean, that's the same as reviews, right? Like, the whole where you sit on the chart really doesn't determine whether your music is powerful or influential or, you know, takes your heart and moves it to somewhere else. To me, I mean, we don't play charts. We try not to play charts here on CITR, and I just... You know, I just think it's so superficial.
It's funny because I'm also obsessed with Stanley Kubrick. And every movie that he made was met with terrible reviews and also, like, you know, a lot of resistance and, like, poor box office and, like, he had a rough time when his movies came out, even though he's a total fucking
genius,
cinematic genius. It's just kind of funny to think that at the time, because, you know, I wasn't alive in the 60s and I was barely alive in the 70s, and, you know, he put out things like Barry Lyndon and, you know, Clockwork Orange, mm-hmm. and, like, that was a super controversial film, Clockwork Orange, you know, like, just, like, it's just amazing that, like, now in 2013, like, all that stuff is, like, it's holier than the Bible almost, you know. It's astonishing, and I think that's kind of the saving grace. You know, all of this stuff that is truly worth it will stand the test of time and not wind up, you know, in that dumpster with Max Headroom, Commodore 64s, and Hammer Pants. You know what I mean? Like,
no one wants to bring back those Hammer Pants, let's be honest. No one does.
You know, I mean, there's a gigantic dumpster with all of that stuff. And so, you know, what I can't really give it a lot of, you know, I can't pay a lot of attention to that stuff, even though it's a little distracting when it's happening. It's like, you know, I'm hopefully about halfway through my life right now, and
hopefully,
well, I hope at least halfway through my life. You know, I'm turning 42 next month.
Congratulations.
And I just kind of try to imagine, you know, when I'm 64 or when I'm 84, you know, or 82, that, or 80, 84, that's twice 42, right? Yeah.
Sounds about right to me.
Anyway, I just kind of hope that, you know, and even once I'm gone, that I've hopefully left something meaningful behind. And that's all that really, really matters. That it's something that will continue to be out there and that people can just pick up, you know, like a book on a shelf, you know,
and rediscover as well.
Exactly. And so, you know, I mean, I can't even believe that it's been 10 years since we put out No Cities Left, you know, and it's kind of like that time just kind of zipped by. And, you know, it's still there to be discovered. So it doesn't really mean, you know, like what its life was when it came out and what its life is now and what its life will be 10 years from now. Kind of none of it matters as long as it's still has a life. You know what I mean?
And absolutely. And it speaks to people, right? Like whenever you're doing something creative, whether it's writing a song, you know, performing a play, writing something, anything, where you're putting your heart out there, you're putting your experience out there. And with reviews, I mean, you're opening up your soul to people. And when they criticize you, obviously, you've gotten a tough skin over the last 20 years, but it really, I'm sure you have, but it really, it means something. And it means even more when someone comes up to you and says, you know what you wrote or what you sang about really spoke to me. And, you know, takes me to a place that is really special for me.
Ultimately, you know, that's kind of, you know, where we hope to exist, like in that sort of, we don't really care so much, you know. I mean, I think there was a time when maybe, you know, we were surrounded by a lot of people that were, you know, wanting us to really go for it in that sort of like go for it kind of mentality. And I think that is a tightrope that a lot of, you know, artists walk, you know, that to take that big leap into like arenas or, you know, like becoming like this sort of blockbuster type of artist, you know.
And look what happened to Blockbuster Video.
Well, I mean, I guess it's just like it's a tightrope. I mean, it could be really, it could still be meaningful, but I mean, it could also be one of those things that doesn't, like, there's a very small percentage of blockbusters that kind of, you know, live as long as, like, you know, the Rolling Stones or whatever, you know, or U2 or what have you. It's very, and I think it's, we've always wanted to do things, I think, from an organic way, and like always just kind of chipping away at it, and we're comfortable with that, very comfortable with that. It was almost a conscious decision, you know, around the time of Gang of Losers to not, even though every record we've put out since No City's Left is greeted with reviews of, oh, the Deers are swinging for the fences and they're never going to get played on the radio, but they're swinging for the fences. Like, okay. So we tried to make the best record we can. I apologize. I'll never do it again. I'm sorry. You know what?
You know what? The fans love it, and I think that's who you should really focus on. And at the end of the day, as long as, when you look back at your life, if you look at it and say, you know what, we were true to ourselves from day one to the end of the end of the Deers, whenever that be, hopefully not for another 20 or so years, coming from a fan's mouth.
But well, you know, I mean, I definitely feel that, like, yes, the mandate is to stay as true as we can to ourselves, and most importantly to the people that have been supporting us all this time. I mean, it would be a travesty to, you know, betray them, you know, and because they've been so supportive over the years. I mean, it's just amazing when we do go out there and, you know, to find anyone there, you know. Never mind,
you're,
you know,
so modest.
I'm serious. I mean, it's just like, to me, that's like a Christmas miracle, you know what I mean? You know, it's just like to see, to continually see people out there, it really is like a giant warm hug, and I can't stress that anymore. You know what I mean? Like,
so are you seriously telling me after 20 years that you're surprised every time you go out on stage that there's people there?
A little bit.
Wow.
Yeah. It's true.
You're too damn modest.
I mean, like, you just never know what to expect. You never know, especially life in the Deers. You just never know what to expect when you go out there. And sometimes it's been harsh too. You know, you show up in some towns and it's like, whoa, that is a grim looking crowd, you know. And then sometimes you show up and it's like, wow, that was amazing, and I can't believe that we can still do that, you know, after all this time. I mean, you got to understand, not to sound condescending,
no,
but you know, the life of a rock band generally is not meant to be, you know, like this super, like, long type of thing. You know, it's you know, you're in, you're out, that's it, you're done, next. You know, you do something else, you go to another band. It's just like, you know, the fact that the Deers have, you know, been kicking around as long as we have and still have an audience that's out there waiting for the next note that we're playing is kind of astonishing. And I am grateful for it, and that is my, you know, muse and motivation all wrapped into one, for me anyway. I can't speak for everybody personally in the band, but it is part of, you know, what we're doing. It becomes a part of what we're doing when we are creating something, you know?
Absolutely. So is that why Live at Pesquero was released now? Because it really is an audio snapshot of the band at a very important time in your history, right? And to me, I was reading something about the other day when you were saying, you know, we didn't want to cut. I mean, we had to cut it down, obviously, the show. It was over three nights. There was a lot of recordings. You had to cut it down, which you didn't want to do. You wanted to, I heard that you wanted to just put out the whole hour and a half, two hours.
Yeah, and I think eventually we will put out more stuff from those shows. I don't know if anybody's interested in hearing some of those moments, but. There was so much going on. Like, we really kind of put ourselves through a boot camp for like 2 years leading up to that, to those shows, and it was really intense. You know, it was very, very intense time for the band that I couldn't really recall for a long time. You know, like that level of intensity and not wanting to make it, but wanting to be the best that we could be, you know, at that time, like do our very best. Everybody was giving 110%, and not that we were not doing that now. I'm just saying I think that, like, everybody was really trying to be true to the music and true to the audience, this audience in Mexico who has, you know, their love has been overwhelming for us. And not that, you know, in other places it's not as overwhelming. It's just there was something about that audience that really stuck out. And so that's why we decided to go out there. And it was just, I mean, I can't, it's such a weird relationship, a weird connection, and we just kind of wanted to highlight it, you know, because of that time in the band when we were really trying to do something. Like, we don't even know what it was, what that thing was. We're just trying to do something, and we put a lot of effort into those songs and those performances, and man, we rehearsed so much for those shows. Like, I can't even, we were writing and rehearsing for a year and a half, mm-hmm. you know, like 3, 4, 5 days a week sometimes, like full days. Like, you know, some people go to the office, some bands go to rehearsal, you know what I mean? Like, that's what we were doing, you know?
And it just seems like they are some of the most memorable and significant moments for the evolution of the band. I mean, you had the new lineup. You, like you say, you were rehearsing for a year and a half with these new songs. It was one of the first times you're playing them to an audience to sort of, I guess, gauge their reception.
Yeah, we hadn't even recorded them. Like,
yeah,
some songs hadn't even, you know, been recorded. Like, not even like a demo of it. Like, it was really. It was really scary.
But it's always scary on the flip side, right? Not so scary after the fact, just scary before the fact.
It was scary like just before going on stage that first night, you know, before playing Omega Dog for the first time in front of an audience. I was absolutely terrified. Like, my heart in my throat, like I'm gonna cry and shit and piss myself all at once. Like, It was, I was terrified, and hearing the crowd and just wanting them to, like, accept what we're doing, like, hope that it's not like, you know, like,
you hear a pin drop.
You know, it was terrifying. So, it kind of made me think of those times when I was a kid and I had to sing in church and in front of a whole bunch of people, and I was like literally throwing up beforehand, you know. So,
well, I watched the I watched it on YouTube, my apologies, a mega dog from that night, and
right.
You looked calm as a cucumber. You faked it till you made it, my friend.
I what, sorry?
You looked as calm as a cucumber. You faked it. And
I think it's more like in a trance.
Fair enough. Now, I wanted to talk to you about how these three shows also grew into a CBC documentary called Never Destroy Us.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was really kind of simple. You know, like, we were literally just minding our own business when Natalia got contacted by an old friend of ours that happened to be producing a series for the CBC. Said, you know, I notice you have all this stuff. Like, what are you doing with it? What's the state of all this stuff? Can we turn it into something? And we were like, you know, yeah, we, you know, there's hours and hours of footage shot on HD for this concert. And she was like, well, can we turn it into something? We were like, yeah, I suppose we could. And so we kind of wrangled something up, you know.
You're so modest. I love it. I love it.
I'm saying that's not modesty. That's modesty. That's just the truth of it. Like, it
Fair
was.
Enough.
It was really hodgepodge, kind of like just thrown to. It was really kind of thrown together. Like, I remember even, like, the guy that we had hired to shoot some of the interviews, like, bailed for the second day of interviews and said, yeah, so we have some more interviews. I was like, I can't do it. I got a date. I can't do it.
Oh,
wow. I'm like, what? So we literally had nobody to shoot.
You're like, we'll just talk to the wall. This is going to be
and
fantastic.
And luckily, like Carrie, who was basically the executive producer of the movie, she's, you know, she knows her way around a camera, obviously, and she just picked up the camera and started shooting the rest of it, which I was really grateful for. She went so beyond the call of duty. She held her hands through the whole process. I mean, the only reason why I was named director was, you know, I had to really kind of direct the thing in the end. Yes, I did, because there wasn't one. And the person that we wanted to get to direct it, or that we thought could, was the guy who shot all the stuff in Mexico. And so we call him and we say, hey, man, can you take the helm on this thing? And he goes, I can't do it, man. I can't do it. I'm too busy. I like, not for this deadline. That's impossible. Like, the deadline was so tight. And so in the conversation, you know, the conference call, it's like, why don't you do it? And I was like, I am not qualified in any, the only qualification I have to do this is the fact that I've been in the band this long. So I kind of had to really learn my way around that experience, and like working with an editor and working with this person, that person. And like, I learned a lot, man. I really, really learned a lot. And I was grateful for the experience, and I want to do something else, you know, with the camera, you know. And so I, part of that process led me back into, you know, photography, and I've been, you know, taking pictures with my vintage 35mm, cameras and stuff, still cameras.
Nice.
And so, you know, it's just kind of opened up this whole world for me, I want to do more of that. I think it's good to work a new artistic muscle, you know.
Absolutely.
And it's good to not, it's not so new, but it's nice to work another artistic muscle that like doesn't get a lot of exercise, and it will hopefully make me a better, more well-rounded artist, you know.
Absolutely. And I mean, if it's something that calls to you, you should definitely utilize that, right?
Oh yeah, yeah, I absolutely love it. I mean, nowadays I always have a camera on me, and I've been developing, you know, film in my basement in my little dark room, and I love those moments of alone with chemicals and darkness.
I did that.
It's a man alone in a room with, with chemicals and darkness.
I think there's a song in that. And you, I've done that before. I've been in dark rooms, and you lose hours, like hours.
Absolutely.
And hours.
I mean, you could just be down there for quite a while, just kind of, you know. It's fun, and then, you know, and with the aforementioned 21st century technology, mm-hmm. you know, you can scan the negative and look at it on the interweb, and share with people. And so I've had this photography blog that I'm really since we had a new baby, I've been a little bit occupied with that, having trouble finding time to sit down and write new blogs. And but, you know, I've been blogging for the last year with pictures and all that stuff, and that's been a fun exercise and developing that and all that stuff, you know.
You're not just a singer, are you?
I'm not just a what?
A singer, are you?
Who said I was a singer?
Oh, you are a very good singer.
Just kidding.
You are hilarious. Now, I want to play one of your song choices. Because
right.
I
did
made...
Did you have trouble finding any of them? I hope not.
No, I found them quite easily. It was
yeah.
good. I have a little process. I hope you enjoyed your homework. I'll just give listeners a little background. I always, when I get artists to come in on the show, I get them to choose three songs that inspire them to be involved in social justice as a sort of Are You Aware mixtape, and then they get to choose one of their own songs that inspire them to be involved in social justice. So the first song that we're playing is by John Lennon, and I wanted you to tell, can you tell us about your first song choice of John Lennon and why you chose that?
What did I choose? Jealous Guy. Well, I mean, apart from it being probably my favorite Lennon song, you know, just all the sort of usual stuff, you know, the production of the record and the the sound of his voice. And but I particularly love the way his voice goes up when he says, I didn't want to make you cry. And he just sort of just, the voice just kind of disappears into a cloud of smoke right there. It's like every time he does that part, I just love it. And I didn't fully understand, because, you know, I wasn't dealing with you directly. I was dealing with Mavis, God bless her, who was sorting me out with the details of this thing, and she was telling me that it was just about songs that make you want to do better or something like that, or be a better person, something of that nature.
That's all good. I mean,
but,
the parameters are loose.
But you said something about social justice, and I'm like, what the...
It's okay.
Can I change my choice?
No, you can't choose. It's locked in now. No, it's fine.
I mean, the thing is it still applies to me, because I really believe that it's really important. You know, it's funny that we're talking about this, because, you know, my daughter, who is 7 years old, is just starting to wake up to the idea that, you know, that, like, she's just dealing with certain social things, like just being in the world with other people, and that everybody has their own sort of will. And, you know, she has to deal with kids at school, and, you know, kids in grade two, I don't know, I don't quite remember what grade two was like, but it probably at times wasn't fun, just because, you know, kids can be rough sometimes, or just not cool. And it's kind of, you know, this I had to explain to her that this stuff, you know, if she thinks she's having any sort of issues with kids now, you know, that's, it just follows you your whole life. You know, I said, I'm 42 years old, kid, and I still have, you know, a lot of these problems that you're talking about in the world. It's just in a different way. And so I'm not sure what, like, what my assignment was. But
I like your song choices.
But from what I understood, it was about, you know, I understood it as something that makes me or anyone want to do better with their life.
Absolutely.
And I really believe that that is the crux of, the nucleus of all of our problems in the world. Like, we look at it from these grand scales of, like, oh, why are these guys fighting all the time, and blah, 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 and this politician's corrupt, et cetera, you know? And we look at it from these gigantic sort of problems, when really it comes down to everyone's daily choices. Everyone, every individual choice makes a difference on a global scale, believe it or not. It's very, 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 it's microscopic, you know, it's nanoscopic. It's like, you can't, that's even a word. But
I like it. No, I'm going
just
with that.
I coined it nanoscopic.
Patent that stuff. Patent it.
It's not. It. I think it's something that when I get up in the morning, you know, I think about how. I mean, I think about how my day is going to go down when I get out there, and who I'm going to have to be dealing with, and how. When I deal with these people, you know, I'm saying everybody from the guy at the gas station to, you know, anybody, like anyone. And I think a lot of people, it's something, I think it's something that can be easily overlooked, you mm-hmm. know. And our choices are so important. And I think a song like Jealous Guy, you know, something that I most certainly am, is a jealous guy, and I know it, and so I can, and knowing is half the battle.
Absolutely,
being able to recognize what's wrong with you,
yep.
is the only way to turn those wrongs into rights. I think, I don't know. I'm just talking out of my. You know what?
You are being a superstar. We are going to keep you on the line. We're going to listen to John Lennon, and then we're going to come back, and I want to talk a little bit more about how you interpret music as a vehicle for positive change. So we'll listen to John Lennon. Don't go away. We've still got more with Murray Lightburn from the Deers, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 in Vancouver. I've just got you back on the phone while we're listening to that song. So
I'm just going to play this last one
and then come back on. And I've got a few more questions about, like, your philanthropic work and
my heart,
like that. And then we'll just talk about the rest of your choices, and then you're free to go. You are like a joy to interview. No, you're being awesome. So do you want to just take a break and listen to John, and then you'll hear me back in the headphones?
I didn't mean to hurt you.
Okay, sounds good.
I'm sorry that I made you cry. Oh no, I didn't want to hurt you. I'm just a jealous guy. Feeling
You're listening to Are You Aware? Music That Has Something to Say on CITR 101.9 in Vancouver. And we are talking to frontman of the Deers, Murray Lightburn. I am so happy to have him on the air. And that was one of his Are You Aware mixtape songs. That was John Lennon from his album, which was a very pivotal album, imagine, Jealous Guy. Murray.
Hey.
Were you grooving along to that one?
Oh, I love that song so much. It's so good.
I know. He shouldn't have left us when he did, unfortunately.
Yeah. Isn't that a little messed up?
Just quietly. I think he would have done a lot of good had he stayed around for a few more years.
Indeed.
So I wanted to talk to you about your musical history, because your father was a jazz man turned preacher, correct?
That's just what the bio says. It's very a romantic rendition of the facts. Now, my old man was definitely, you know, an aspiring musician, and music was a big part of growing up. It was always around and somewhat readily available. You know, between my mom's classical records and my dad's jazz records, and you know, R&B and such, Motown, what have you, and you know, that kind of stuff was always around. And then eventually, it morphed into or got hijacked by the church. I guess church music. I wouldn't say gospel. People have this idea of what gospel is, and I honestly only know what real gospel is from taking a history of rock and roll class. It's just church music to me, you know. And so I was exposed to a lot of that type of music, and then. But my old man when I first picked up the guitar when I was like, I guess 15 or whatever, he would like teach me certain like standards, like the melodies of certain standards, like Someone to Watch Over Me or like Round Midnight, or you know, he would just whistle them for me and then tell me to play them, you know, like he wouldn't actually show me actual notes or play along with them. He would just like whistle them and say, play this here, you know, kind of thing.
That's a pretty drown or swim kind of way of music, like educating you in music, I guess.
I wouldn't really call it an education. I kind of wish I had a more formal sort of like, you know, I wish I took, you know, like violin or something like that, and learned more theory, because I didn't really learn much theory until I was a grown man in my 20s. I went to Concordia and took some courses there, you know, I took music as a minor and I did that for a couple of years, and that's where I actually learned how to communicate with, you know, string and brass players and transposing for those blasted E flat horns.
Learning the language of all the different instruments.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of got tired of having all this music in my head and not being able to communicate on at least a rudimentary level with trained musicians, you know. Nowadays, you know, I mean, we're talking in the mid 90s, you know, late early aughts, o's, whatever, you know. Back then, when you hooked up with a trained musician, you wouldn't ever imagine it pairing with rock and roll music at that time, or with a rock band, you know. And back then, that's what, you know, the Deers were always trying to marry that sort of, bring in that orchestral thing from a while ago, like, you know, from even, we used to, you know, do it on demos, for God's sakes, you know, like if I could get, you know, some McGill musicians to come in and play some string bits that I, you know, came up with, you know, we would do that. And now, you couldn't swing a dead cat without coming across somebody playing a fiddle in a rock band, you know?
Well, you know what? You guys were the innovators, so you guys can stand strong with that one.
Well, it just, I think it just became, like, more of a thing, obviously, because of, you know, bands like Arcade Fire and even, like, I guess, Broken Social Scene bringing in a lot of brass and trumpet and stuff, and, you know, kids thinking, hey, maybe that's a cool thing for me to do, so I don't have to be a total music nerd, you know? And I think it's cool, you know? I think it's awesome because it makes being in the studio now as a rock band and wanting to get that stuff on your record, it makes it so much easier because, you know, they're more inclined and more, and the communication's easier and all that sort of thing. You know, it's not, there isn't as much of a barrier as there was, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
Absolutely.
So I'm grateful for that. You know?
Well, and it's just melding all those kind of styles and the genres and just the sounds into something really beautiful. And, I mean, you're all speaking the same language. You wanna produce a really good song.
Yeah, yeah. At the end of the day, though, nothing makes a session go faster than charts, you know?
You're like, when's this ending? When's it ending?
So, and technology has made that easier. I mean, I just did a session up at the Deers studio recently. We have like a small studio up by the 40, the highway, the main highway through the city. And I had some players come in, and one of which played on Starr's Set Yourself on Fire like 10 years ago. Who happens to be my kid's violin teacher now.
Oh, wow.
So, it's just kind of a small community over here, so just saying.
Oh,
and so she came up with a girl playing cello who I didn't realize she played in a band that opened for the Deers like 6 months ago. So I didn't even know that, but when she said, I gotta have a cello player that I can bring to the session, I was like, and they came up, and I had all the stuff in my computer, and I just told the computer, print me up some charts for these players, and boom, you know, there it was in black and white. I had all these perfectly printed, you know, I still have composed it all, of course, mm-hmm. You know, it all came from my brain and
that's
such
right.
And...
out of the magic that is Murray Lightburn's brain.
I'm just yanking. I'm just fooling around. Sorry. And I'm going off track. I apologize.
You are all good. You don't have to apologize for anything. This is totally fun. So it sounds like your children are following in your footsteps.
We'll see. We'll see. another funny thing. Yesterday, as I was going on my musical internet wormhole, I was watching a documentary about, a piece on Sly and the Family Stone, and my son, my infant son, who turns 4 months next week.
Oh wow!
Was sitting on my lap, and he was just totally into it. Like, like he was so transfixed on this band playing in front of him.
That's awesome.
And I was just thinking how this is like that moment in a movie, you know, like in his like biographical movie, the story of his life. If you know, it's like, and he was watching Sly and the Family Stone. Fast forward 30 years from now, he's on stage in front of thousands of people,
slapping that funky bass.
I just thought it was a funny moment.
Well, he's got discerning taste because Sly and the Family Stone is very good.
Indeed. I mean, what an intense. I mean, it's such a tragic story that that band has, and you know, Sylvester Stone or Stallone Stone. Anyway,
One's the actor, one's the musician.
It's just a sad story because, I mean, the guy is still immensely, like, just dripping with, oozing with talent. Like, it's incredible, and it's just, like, it's just really sad what, you know, has happened, you know, to that whole scene. And, I mean, like, the body of work that they produced that we all know and love is just, wow. Like no one will ever touch that stuff. Like, there's this, you know, I mean, that's the thing. I have a lot of trouble getting into a lot of contemporary stuff just because, and that includes, you know, present company, the Tears. You know, I think, like, those are the, I think when we go to make something, like, that is what, we never really have much, or if any, contemporary musical sort of, like...
You don't want to auto-tune the Dears? Is that what you're telling me?
We've used auto-tune as an effect once before, but never for, you know, sort of masking tape or whatever, or liquid papering. We never use it on that. We use it as an actual effect in that sort of T-Pain way for kicks, but also it just suited the song.
Fair enough.
I think a lot of, like, you know, we just listened to Jealous Guy, and, like, you know, no one's really still, like, in 2013 making anything that can hold a candle to that kind of recording and that kind of intensity and passion. Like, I really don't. I, you know, people talk about all these bands that everybody's loving right now, and I just don't hear it. Like, I don't hear it. All I hear a lot of the times in a lot of the current music, I mean, God bless them all. Everybody's trying. I mean, we're fucking trying, for God's sakes. But, it, you know, it's tough because, you know, there's so much going on that's distracting us from making, you know, really realizing. I think a lot of the current, you know, cool music can be better if, you know, a lot of things were taken away from the equation. And I think, like, you know, as much as technology has, you know, really ushered in a lot of convenience and, like, making, you know, like I said, banging out a string chart can take, you know, no time at all, you know. But I also think that there's a lot of things that make being in a band in the 21st century miserable, you know.
Well, I saw a fantastic photo on Facebook the other day of, it was a photo of Queen, and it was a photo of Beyonce, and it was showing one of the Queen songs. I've sort of lost it right now, but it said one songwriter, one producer, and then it had a Beyonce song, and it had like four songwriters and four, like seven producers. And yet, which song is better, right? Like, so, I mean, more isn't necessarily the best, right?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's not even, I think it's just not even in that sort of the pop realm. I think across the board, like, I think even, like, you know, I don't relate to what is known as indie rock, even though my band is supposed to be an indie rock band. I don't relate to that genre at all. Like, I'm in a band. We're very independent. But in terms of the sort of genre that it's become, sort of like what happened with grunge after grunge, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just kind of become like another genre that has a sort of formulaic, you know, there's a lot of painted by numbers stuff coming out from that genre that, you know, people are like, oh, it's indie rock, you know, they're so indie. And it's like, you know, you dig a little deeper and it's like backed by hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars from a major label. You know what I mean? It's like totally manufactured, you know, kind of stuff when you dig deep a little bit deeper, you know, and there's nothing independent about it. It's just preying on, you know, the culture that's popular, you know. And while I relate to a lot of bands, you know, music in that genre, I also relate to a lot of, you know, classical music and funk and R&B, et cetera, you know. I don't like just listen to one type of music, especially if it sounds remotely anything like the Tears. I'm definitely not listening to that.
And with that, saying that, because I want to make sure we've got about 10 minutes left before the end of the show, and I want to make sure I get to your last three song choices. So Tell me about your choice. Like, I'm so impressed with Sly. I'm a huge fan. I love it. So when I saw that, I was like, yay. So tell me, Sly and the Family Stone and then Mahalia Jackson, why those two choices?
Well, as I said, you know, growing up in the church, you know, Mahalia Jackson was a big deal, obviously, and but for all the, you know, like, I mean, I don't know if you listen to a lot of Mahalia Jackson, but we have a few records around here that are really, you know, like, I can't get enough of that voice. Like, it's just, and the accompaniment is like a vocal and like an organ, that's it, a lot of the times, and it's so intense and heartbreaking and beautiful. And and the other thing is, a song like Amazing Grace, you know, I mean, I know that Christianity gets a bad name, and religion and Catholicism and all that stuff gets a really bad name, but people forget what is at the bottom of it, you know, like what it's really about. And, you know, what I said before about, you know, all that stuff about, like, doing individually, you know, looking after yourself, you know, can speak volumes. If everybody did that, imagine what kind of place we would live in.
Absolutely.
Really, what happens is people disregard what they're doing. They disregard what the impact that it has on other people, and that's where we wind up with problems.
Absolutely. Well, Murray, I want to. I hate to say I have to go now, because I've got the next DJ waiting to come in, but I just wanted to say thank you so, so much for coming.
Wait, can I ask you, does the next DJ, like, have his, like, face, like, in the window, like, fogging up the window?
Pretty,
like,
much.
Knocking.
And he's bigger than me. So I just wanted to say thank you so much. This really has been a joy to talk to you and really find out more about the Dears. And you're just such a wonderful person. It's been an absolute treat to talk to you.
I really appreciate that a lot. Thank you very much.
And please don't break up anytime soon, the Dears. We love you guys too much.
Who said anything about breaking up?
I'm just saying. I just wanted to put that out there. Just don't. That's all I'm saying. Just don't. End of story.
Well, thanks very much, and it was great talking to you too. I'm sorry if I gabbed on too much.
Not at all, not at all. I like I said, the Dears, check out their new album, Live at Pesquero. It's a beautiful album. I was listening to it last night, and you know, the essential rawness of the Dears is just epitomized in that album. So check it out. But now, before we, I've got 5 more minutes left, and I want to put in the 2 last songs that Murray Lightburn chose on his album, Are You Aware mixtape, Sly and the Family Stone, Everybody is a Star, and then we've got Mahalia Jackson with Amazing Grace. Once again, Murray, thank you so much for coming on air. All right, talk to you soon.
Take care.
System tries to bring you down. sound.